It's 5/21/2019. That's a Tuesday. It's also a very odd day because all the numbers of today are odd, except for the 2 in 2019.
But 21, we're really going to count the individual digits?
I'm not really sure about the 0 either. It's probably not odd, probably not even.
More importantly, we don't know where Krista is. So don't comment and say, where's Krista?
Because we don't even.
You know who knows? Krista. And today we're going to do government and social media news, as we often do. Because sometimes it works out that you can put those together.
Oh no. I touched the mic.
And instead of starting off with some sort of U.S. politician, because this leads into a story about a U.S. politician, we're going to start talking about Huawei.
Huawei is willing to sign a no-spy pact with governments, Chairman. We actually have a lot of Huawei stories this week because there have been a lot of happenings in the EU and a lot of happenings here in the U.S. So this seems, I mean, I don't know. I'm not in the CIA, obviously, but it seems legit.
Isn't this kind of like signing a no-murder pact? Like, you're already not supposed to be doing that.
Yeah.
So why would we need additional... What is the penalty above and beyond the regular spying penalty here? It doesn't make any sense.
Well, what if there are security vulnerabilities that are incompetence and not malice?
Again, what guarantee does this give you? It's ridiculous. But I guess some people might feel that way, but as I said earlier, the lead-in is one man who does not agree with that, Mr. Donald Trump.
Trump's administration hits China's Huawei with the 1-2 punch. So not only is Huawei banned from participating in U.S. communications network, we talked about that, but U.S. companies are banned from exporting their gear to Huawei.
Yeah.
And affiliates. There's like 63 affiliates of Huawei. U.S. companies are also not allowed to sell those people's stuff.
And they have a big list, which probably a lot of U.S. companies are currently dealing with.
Yeah.
They're going to have to stop. And China, not happy about it.
Yeah.
Not happy one bit.
I mean, it would be like the U.S. equivalent would be China doing this with, say, like Cisco or Apple.
Which they probably will.
Foreshadowing.
Trade war. Espionage war.
And not the fun kind of trade war like I used to play back on the BBSs.
Yeah. They say that trade wars come first and then shooting wars come after.
Yeah.
That's a pretty common thing. And another thing coming out of the White House, Donald Trump, as we all know, much like you, addicted to Twitter.
His addiction might be a little worse than mine. Like, if it was a meth equivalent, he would probably already be losing his teeth.
He has more exposure than you.
Yeah, that's true.
I think the addiction is kind of a linear curve.
Based on exposure?
He's just in that, like, fentanyl level.
His kidneys are shutting down. He doesn't even realize it.
He doesn't care. But he loves it, and the people that support him have been systematically eliminated from Twitter. And that's objectively true. People who are big Trump supporters get kicked off a lot. And you might say that's because they're hateful or whatever, but he doesn't seem to think so. So he's taken a step to protect them.
The White House has launched a tool to report censorship on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and Twitter. If you suspect political bias has caused an action to be taken against you, share your story with President Trump. So I guess Alex Jones is the first person in line here, right?
How many of these do you think he'll read himself?
0. Like, less than 0.
Now, they do point out here that they go to great pains to say, we're not necessarily going to do anything about this. This is just for you to tell us about it. So it's not like you're not reporting a crime or anything. And they might ignore all of it. Maybe it's just to make you feel better. But
I definitely don't want to lose the ability to remove idiots from a platform. Because like if I owned Twitter and I ran Twitter and it's like, oh, this person is an idiot and they're making trouble, banned.
Well, but that's the argument, right? Once you become something like Twitter, does it become free speech?
Twitter owns the platform, but is there another platform?
Well, I mean, that's the law. That's probably how it should work. But a lot of people disagree with that because they're saying that it's kind of like the argument against requiring you to have a Facebook account or something like that. You know, like, is it a big enough part of society that kicking you off of it is kind of like shutting you out.
It is going to be interesting because I always think about cities and sidewalk law, because the public has a, like, if you own a building in a city, the public has a right of way to the sidewalk in front of your building, but you technically own that land, but you have to keep it up. But the public has certain rights to be able to use the sidewalk. Now, the public can't use your entire building, but they can use the sidewalk.
But I should be able to sue somebody if their dog poops on my property.
Also, okay, under U.S. law. Not really.
Should be.
You get a tort, though. I mean, you could take action against somebody who allows their dog to poop on their lawn, but not an escalating action.
I don't think any court would actually take that.
No, I mean, like, prosecutor would. Oh, like legal. No, well, it's a civil.
Oh, you want to go? Nah. I'd say a judge would throw that out as wasting his time or her. Anyway, that's the big argument. And I think we're moving toward laws getting changed because of that. Because everybody, the big tech companies, I think, are the big scapegoat. I mean, they're awful. Let's not say they're not awful. And they are, you know, using our data and making millions off of it. But they're going to be the scapegoat for the 2020 election.
Is there an equivalent public right-of-way law for companies like Twitter? That is an interesting question.
I think there's probably going to be. I don't know. But then they did start the alternative Twitter, which, you know, there was some white nationalism and racism stuff. And then Cloudflare shut them down, right?
Yeah.
So.
And then they were like, you know, we probably shouldn't have done that because that's a slippery slope.
So, yeah. But then you get into that point. It's like, okay, you kicked me off your platform. I'm going to go create my own platform. But then everybody is shutting me down in every avenue. Like Alex Jones, they took his monetization, they took his payment processing, they took him off of everything. So how much is too much?
You know what the fix is? To make sure that the citizenry is intellectually equipped to point out an idiot. That's the fix.
But then they would have to point at themselves. Nobody's going to do that.
Yeah, I agree with you there.
One thing I think, if there's one issue that both sides of the aisle and all of Americans can agree on, except for a tiny, tiny, tiny percentage, is robocalls. We all hate them. I don't think anybody's like, man, I love robocalls. It makes me feel alive.
The elderly.
I got one in Mandarin yesterday.
Huh, I wonder why.
How did I get on that list? Anyway, Mr. Ajit Pai has finally stepped in.
The FCC has announced action and the legal framework to fight robocalls. This looks fairly comprehensive. You could do a whitelist if you want with your carrier, although I see kind of a dark side here, because your carrier can whitelist, like you can go in and add numbers to your list that are allowed to receive calls, plus also whatever has been whitelisted by your carrier. So what would stop your carrier from forming a deal with, say, you know, like the Hilton hotel chain, and allow the Hilton hotel chain to do robocalls to you?
Could happen. They also had one solution where only your contact list was available to you through calls. But often I get calls from people who, like, I only need to call from them one time.
Yeah.
Because I'm dealing with something, and that would make that very difficult.
The Google, on the Google phones, the screening app is fairly effective at stopping robocalls, where it's just like, hey, I'm screening my call. Can you prove you're a human? And
well, that's the other thing. Each carrier is supposed to have a system in place to communicate with the other carriers and say, yes, this is real, which is probably the best way to do it. Either way, any improvement is good, right?
I would like to see just a rule in there that says the carriers are not allowed to sell access. Like, they're not allowed to form a pact with a company to guarantee that their calls will complete with you.
Yeah, well, that would get stripped out.
Yeah.
Right before it got signed by a powerful lobby. You'd just be putting money in the pockets of the lobbyists and the politicians.
See, this is why you need us. We're lobbyists. You gotta, otherwise, you're going to have crap like this you got to deal with.
5G continues to roll along. We have a story in the business section about 5G and how it's maybe improving. And it's, was it Chicago where they're running it?
Yeah, there's a trial, I think, running there.
But there is an issue with 5G that it seems like everybody knew about, but just kind of ignored because 5G must go ahead at all costs, right?
5G is likely to mess with weather forecasts, but the FCC auctions the spectrum anyway. So, yeah, it turns out that there's some frequency overlap. Actually, scroll down. There's a chart. There's a handy chart.
It's 23.8 or something. Like, water vapor is, oh, this is from a comment. Water vapor is 23.8 or something like that.
And this is for 24 gigahertz.
So the satellites literally
look at the Earth and look for 23.8 or whatever the number is. And that's like, if they see it, they're like, oh, that's moisture. That's water. So they're able to detect water that way. But if you have a 24 gigahertz signal, then that's basically just like always broadcasting water at the satellite. And we use this for weather prediction, which is super important.
Womp womp.
Especially if you're the Navy, for example, and you have vessels at sea, which could be sunk by...
you need some deployment operations.
Yeah. So, yeah, that could be a problem, but let's just ignore it till it happens, right?
That would be the commercial way. I mean, that's capitalism, right? Allow the private industry to solve that problem.
That's not capitalism. Yet that's the FCC's auctioning that off. Capitalism would have no FCC. Facial recognition. That's a big thing we've got going on. The cops are using it. Pretty much all the like the surveillance cameras and stuff are using it.
The cops are using it in hilarious ways, as we will find out in the security section.
They had the story, I can't remember what kind of business it was, but somebody robbed them and they just gave the security footage to the cops and they ran it through the facial recognition. So it's you're never protected from it because the cops are going to be using it. Anyway, San Francisco, on the forefront of hipster lawmaking, have decided to make up their own mind about it.
CNN Business says that San Francisco has just banned facial recognition technology. It's a blanket ban. It's gone. Not allowed to be used by law enforcement.
Except on the federal level. Federal level law enforcement can use facial recognition technology. If you're using it now, you got to tell them how you're using it and how you're storing it and what you're going to do about deleting it and stuff like that. If you want to use it in the future, you have to go through a committee. So, cops are not happy about it. They like it. I don't know how I feel about it. I mean, it's probably good that we have less, but... You think that'll really stop them?
I was reading some other, not for this week's news, but just some stuff in general about face recognition. And one of the proponents of face recognition that had is like initially they were staunchly against it because of the dark side and the lack of accuracy and that kind of thing. But then there was somewhere that they did a study. There was a town that had a bunch of crime, and they found that like a very very tiny percentage of the population was controlling most of the like robbery and larceny and, you know, like street crime type stuff. And once they eliminated five or six key players in that, it went down like 70%.
Well, I'm sure that's true everywhere.
So that's like, oh yeah, face recognition will solve that problem. I'm not sure I believe that, but it was an interesting take on that. They compared it to like message board troublemakers. It's like, you know, 0.01% of your message board users are the troublemakers, and then that stirs up other people that otherwise wouldn't be troublemakers, and then it snowballs from there.
But that also uncovers very unpleasant demographic truths about those things.
Yeah. And
people don't like to hear that, no. So they blame the technology.
Mm.
Supreme Court says Apple will have to face App Store monopoly lawsuit.
Monopoly? I guess, so a monopoly means that there's no competition, and you eliminate competition and make it so that there can't ever be competition. Now, see, would that apply to the App Store? I think it would.
I thought of another way to look at this. So, suppose you got a Netflix subscription, and you want to do this Netflix subscription through iTunes. Well, Netflix is going to have to charge you 30% more to earn the same margin if you just subscribe directly through Netflix. So the Supreme Court kind of has a point here. Apple also, this is, you know, they wanted the developers to bring suit, not the end users. But the end users have cause here because if Apple doesn't prevent Netflix from offering subscriptions directly, I guess, but they have in the past.
But Apple also they make a lot of decisions and they cite protection of the user in the App Store. But when the lawsuits come, they're like, no. That's not us. That's the developer.
Yeah.
So you can't really have it both ways.
After seeing Apple's legal maneuvering in the Huawei case, they are like, they're by default the most amoral company ever.
Mark Zuckerberg says, hold my beer.
Yeah. You think he can have beer or will that like short circuit?
He probably has like a, some sort of green drink instead.
Yeah.
Lubricates his parts. Speaking of facial recognitions, wow, should have put these two stories together. That was an oversight. But the NYPD, unlike San Francisco, uses facial recognition all the time. But they have a dark secret.
That was what I alluded to, because the NYPD has used altered images in its facial recognition system, new documents show. I thought this was going to come in security, though. The really hilariously awesome thing about this is somebody was mugged or something, and they were like, well, the guy kind of looked like Woody Harrelson. So they uploaded a picture of Woody Harrelson and tracked the guy down. But it's like,
Now they claim that they wouldn't go just on facial recognition, that they would use facial recognition
to narrow it down and then just pick out a random guy.
Right. But then there's an even more disturbing thing. So if you look, they show, so this thing, like this is the original photo that they have of somebody, and then they will digitally change it. And sometimes they'll use another mouth. Like they can't, you know,
you can't easily like,
so this is just a stock mouth. And it's like, oh, it's maybe it's this guy. But they're working with a third mouth.
Yeah.
So that's disturbing, especially if you're the guy whose mouth they're using, right? Because you have some non-trivial chance of being caught up in that.
That's so. A fun thing to explain to clients is like, they're like, can you like Photoshop it so like this person's mouth is different? Or like from a different side, like they're looking a different way. I'm like, that's not...
That's not how Photoshop works. Yeah. It's like that terrible made-for-TV movie, Knight Rider 2000, where Kit misidentified James Doohan. That was bad. That was really bad.
A lot of people are going to be able to relate to that.
I've never seen that movie.
It's really
most
obscure.
Of the population has never seen that. But, San Francisco, when you look at it in that light, maybe they've got a point, because it shows the dark side of, if you are in law enforcement, and this is not really a condemnation of law enforcement, it's just human nature, you're going to take any kind of shortcut you can to get your job done, right? You're going to try to be efficient. So it's like, listen, if we got to fudge the numbers a little bit, I'll bring that guy in. If he's innocent, I'll just let him go, right?
We're going to bring in Woody Harrelson and question him. I mean, obviously, but you know.
That's the correct path to go.
And then we're all going to get selfies with him afterwards. Everybody's going to be happy.
Except for Woody Harrelson.
We've covered this story before, but there's been some new developments. This is the story about, so the laws should be available to the people. Obviously, if you're going to follow the laws, you need to know the laws. But the one thing that law firms do is they annotate those laws. And the annotations are used in legal decisions. But they're also a copyright.
Accused of terrorism for putting legal materials online. Yes, the prosecutor has said that this is a form of terrorism because this guy wants to publish those annotations.
It seems like the correct thing, if you're going to go after it, would be copyright, not terrorism. But terrorism does get you more headlines.
Yeah, like I'm not sure who this puts in terror, except like that one law firm that the state hires. It has the copyright. But so the argument is annotations are not the law, but they are used in determining the law.
The context.
Understanding the meaning. Law.
And they talk about in law school, they actually will teach you, hey, don't interpret it for yourself. Go to the annotations. Look at previous court decisions and look at what has been written about these. Because everybody in the cases, the judge, everybody's going to read that and they're going to take it into account.
But
so it's part of the legal system.
But non-standard interpretations is how we've got this new hipster things like the FISA court and warrantless surveillance. How else, if you can't just DIY on the interpretation, how are you supposed to do an end run around the laws?
Maybe that's their end game. Start down those pesky annotations.
Listen, we need to obscure the meanings of these words. These smart people are using our own words against us. We just need to change the meaning of the words.
Or just hide all of the prior course law or case law.
Now, Wendell, you've been known to use your phone while walking.
Constantly.
Mm-hmm. You've been known to use your phone while driving.
I'm trying to cut down on that.
Eating.
Yes.
Yeah, eating.
Computing.
Yes.
Conference call.
Oh, yeah.
Client face-to-face meetings.
Pooping.
Everybody does that. You're not alone there.
Who takes your phone into the bathroom?
Krista, everybody.
I don't do that. I get my business done and I go.
Miss High and Mighty.
Listen, you need to eat more fiber and get that shit done.
I guarantee you, Wendell's bathroom visits are like 10% pooping and 90% pooping.
And then it's like, oh, wait, I was done 20 minutes ago.
My legs are numb. Anyway, let's get back on track here.
Level one TMI.
If you were to go to New York, you would be in trouble.
New York is considering fining pedestrians for texting while crossing. So, okay, but this is saying that even just using your phone, like doing anything with your phone in your hands while crossing is, you know, a fine.
Yeah, and so they cite a lot of people get run over in New York, as you might imagine with that insane traffic.
There's that horrible picture there.
So some people are saying that we're victim blaming, because is it always the driver's fault? I don't know if it's always the driver's fault, because there are times when the pedestrian shouldn't be there, and they'll do it. I mean, here, especially because our city's kind of small, people don't bother with crosswalks. Even on the larger roads, they'll just stroll right out into heavy traffic. And most of the time, it's because of methamphetamine.
We're walking the road.
Now, if I hit a meth head, is it my fault? I don't think so.
excuse you, they're on Suboxone.
Suboxone is opiate suppression.
Shh, it's fine.
Anyway, interesting law. You know one thing it would do a lot of? Revenue generation. Because you know people are going to ignore it.
New York definitely needs that.
Yeah. And then I'm sure that they're going to take a page out of China's book and do like the facial recognition camera jaywalking.
Auto fine.
Phone. Yeah, yeah.
Just automatically fine. It just automatically takes it out of your account. Like,
well, you'll get a text message while you're walking with your phone to let you know that.
Your car has been impounded. Your car has been crushed into a cube. Your cube is now impounded.
Now, this next story, we're here in coal country. A lot of you don't know what Kentucky's famous for. Yeah, there's the chicken and the horses, but also
bourbon.
Coal. Lots of coal. Or at least it used to be like that. You know, the Obama administration kind of stamped it out. But so we have a lot of ex-coal miners here. And it's also true of West Virginia. And some people, a little myopically, I think, decided, you know what? If you're a coal miner, you could become a programmer, right? Those are two. That's a career that you could transition between seamlessly. Maybe not.
West Virginians.
Oh look what you've done.
West Virginians were promised coding jobs in Appalachia. Now they say it was a fraud. So this is a story mainly about a company called Mind Mines. Yeah. Ha, 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 ha.
Like coal mines.
Really just rolls off the tongue. Easy to put into a URL bar.
It was supposed to be a 16-week like code boot camp kind of a thing. And it was run, and it was done as a nonprofit, but a for-profit company was involved, and they would get a bunch of people and have them work on client projects, and they would kind of pay them, but then later you would actually pay to be a part of the boot camp course, or there were scholarships, so there's a lot of really shady stuff going on.
There was a lot of government money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, nobody has had really good success with this. The journalist only found one person that had graduated, and they are now working delivery.
Well, they promised 100% job placement. They are at 0%.
Yeah.
So.
Well, they only found one person who'd actually graduated from, like, quote-unquote graduated from the program.
Well, they also mentioned that the people teaching it weren't qualified themselves. Mm-hmm. And then once you got one class through, they were expected to teach the next class. Although they were taught by non-qualified.
Hey, that sounds like a pyramid scheme.
And what they would do is, once you went through the course, you would be given jobs within their company, which was the for-profit arm. But also, they interviewed some of the people who went through it, and they were like, they used Ruby, so I guess they were doing CMS projects mostly, probably. And the person was like, every time I would go to the teacher with a problem, they'd just be like, Google it. And I got the impression they had no idea what they were doing. So.
Neat. And it's not to say that it was a bad idea. I think that there's a certain percentage of coal miners that could be retrained for something else.
But yeah, but it's...
I don't think 16 weeks is enough time to get productive.
But it's not 100%. It's probably not 25%.
Well, and the issue, too, is, like, even if you get a job, and let's say you can't work remotely, like, how many of those people are going to want to leave the house that they built or have in the middle of nowhere, Kentucky, or Virginia or wherever?
No, I think they had an office there.
Really?
Like locally.
Yeah, the article said that they were moving from town to town. Like the article said they're currently in Logan, West Virginia, which is an especially hard hit mining town that's no longer about mining.
You're going to get comments about that. Chicago. We've talked about how corrupt Chicago is. And the answer is hopelessly so. And one of the problems that they have is tax revenue, because people are leaving at a rapid pace because of said corruption, and because they waste all the money. And so they instituted this one a while back, but they're finally taking some money.
Chicago becomes the first city to collect the Netflix tax. I remember we reported on this and made fun of Chicago for being hilariously corrupt, but they've collected $2 million.
Yeah, and this is
stupid
not
Chicago.
It's not just Netflix. That's a
Sony like and some other companies
nickname. It's not actually called that, but any kind of online streaming. No, it wasn't Chicago, but was it Pittsburgh or Philadelphia? They were doing the video game tax.
Yeah, you know who else Chicago dinged? That was Eventbrite, of all people, like the event management company.
Well, listen, they're bleeding out. They got to take money any way they can. So yeah, so if you live in Chicago, then these companies on your account are paying extra, and I don't think Netflix is passing it through yet, are they?
I don't think so.
But
well, I'm sure they'll raise the price.
They
again.
Will, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they definitely
or
will.
They'll just raise it and let everybody pay Chicago's tax, which,
yeah,
that's crap.
Time to cancel Netflix.
I do need to cancel my Netflix. I keep forgetting, which is what they want.
What if you get a VPN from Chicago to somewhere else and then watch Netflix? Like, what if you are watching
the billing address?
What if you watch Netflix on a remote computer with a remote computer's billing address and... I don't know.
It's the billing address.
Could you just lie about your billing address?
Yeah, if you know, like if you could get...
Online P.O. box.
If you have family that lives somewhere else.
Yeah.
Sure, why not? And Netflix doesn't do paper billing anyway, right?
Yeah.
Would they even ever figure it out if you used a fake address?
Probably not.
As long as you're paying the bill.
I guess it's going to match the credit card, too.
Oh, you're right. I bet it's the credit card address.
Why would anybody ever want to live in Chicago?
I mean,
what if
stuff to do in Chicago.
But what if you get gift cards?
You could just go visit.
Oh, yeah, the Netflix gift cards.
Netflix gift cards, fake address. That's how you beat. Of course, they're not passing it through. But if they ever do, just mentally note, Netflix gift cards, fake address. That's how you'll beat that.
Neat.
In the UK, they have this ability to hack you. The government, pretty much with impunity, gets to hack you. And previously, when people were like, hey, you shouldn't be able to hack me, I'm going to sue you, they said, no, we're the government. You can't sue us. But maybe a little ray of sunshine.
UK hacking powers can be challenged in court, a judge has ruled. UK spies are no longer to skip court if their choices are considered unlawful.
So judge nice. Found dead. Yeah. Killed by spies.
Polonium. Now, they talk about, obviously, the hackers... Government hackers are very upset about this, and they're like, this is outrageous, this is ridiculous. But I think one of the big hurdles here is that last part, if the choices are considered unlawful. Because you're going to have to find another sympathetic judge to make that consideration.
And after they kill the first one, to send a message.
Yeah, that's going to be a chilling effect.
I'd watch that movie.
But hey, that's kind of good, I guess. And maybe some more good news about hacking.
Ooh, goes them cybercrime gang, which stole millions, has been busted. The BBC News has the article about the takedown and the stuff that went into it and all this kind of stuff. So this was a crime gang, like a crime syndicate or whatever. They collected $100 million from this thing.
It was
which
all
is
about
crazy.
Getting in and getting access to your banking information. And they did it with a dropper. So they, you know, it was phishing mostly, that kind of thing. And they'd get you to click on a link. Get the dropper in there, get the malware in behind it, steal your banking credentials, make off with your money.
Is the stock photo here just the web inspector?
Yes.
Because that's
at it. He's hacking.
Because only a hacker would look at the CSS, Krista.
Well, clearly.
That's secret code.
They're not even using like the breakpoint inspector in the JavaScript. I mean, that would even be a little bit more unbelievable.
Noobs.
Just like straight at the HTML, he's got to know.
Now let's do a little China block. Remember Dragonfly?
I do.
How could anybody defend Dragonfly, right? I mean, it was a terrible thing. No one would say, no one could make the argument that Dragonfly would be good for the Chinese people. It's just impossible.
Oh, wait. The Intercept has this article about Google's censored search would help China, quote-unquote, be more open, said ex-CEO Eric Schmidt.
How smug he is.
He was completely unironically talking about this. And, you know, he was in an interview, and he handled the interview really well. But one of the sources for The Intercept who worked on the Dragonfly project was asked by The Intercept about this. You know, what do you think? They said it's total BS. Eric Schmidt is just feeding them a total BS.
Yeah, well, he made some comments about the people must have known what they were working on, right? And that guy was like, no, of course we did. We were so compartmentalized and the secrecy was so absolute that we didn't know what the hell we were working on. And of course we wouldn't have been doing it if we knew that it was censored Chinese search. But maybe the most ridiculous thing he said was Dragonfly would somehow make China more open.
X doubt.
If I were the interviewer, I'd be like, oh, Mr. Schmidt, could you expound on that, perhaps? Could you give some examples?
And then he just makes that face in the header.
And speaking of China, not only do they like to, they want censored search results. They don't get them yet. They will eventually. But from time to time, they arbitrarily choose to turn things off. And this is a big one.
The Great Firewall of China has blocked off Wikipedia. And it's not because students are cheating on research papers. It's because there's certain things on Wikipedia that the Chinese government doesn't want to be on Wikipedia.
Is Wikipedia cheating? I mean, the knowledge is there. You consume it in your research.
Well, and it has sources. Yeah. Pro tip, when you're writing a research paper and you want to cite Wikipedia, but you don't really want to, just go down to the sources and list those instead.
Yeah, I don't.
It's a little shady, but...
little shady.
But then, see, the red flag is going to come, Krista, when every student has the same sources.
Because
everybody did what
you
said.
I mean, you have to be smart about it, but...
Yeah, you keep it to yourself. And don't throw it out there on YouTube.
I'm not in school anymore. I'm done.
You're ruining it for everybody else. 5G is coming. We talked about 5G before, and... Here's an interesting thing that I had not considered about 5G. And in a place like Japan, where Internet of Things is more ubiquitous than it is here, which, you know, is kind of crazy here. In Japan, apparently, they want their toaster to have a phone number, right? Why wouldn't you?
Internet of Things phone numbers.
Why wouldn't you want your toaster to be able to robocall people with malware, right? So you got to have a lot of phone numbers. Even little tiny nation like Japan, they... Too many. So what do? You just add digits.
Japan plans to create a 10 billion 14-digit phone number as 5G era nears.
How many people live in Japan?
Not 10 billion.
Well, there's not 10 billion people in the world.
Well, listen, your phone has to have a phone number. Some of your apps have to have phone numbers. Your toaster has to have a phone number.
And you're going to have to update all those apps to allow for 14-digit phone numbers.
How else are you going to call your...
What do we got? 400 million?
Yeah.
So Japan, they're like way more... population density than us, but they've probably got like 200 million at the most.
Well, they had the foresight to actually, all of their Internet of Things devices already has its own international prefix. So, I mean, that seems like that's ripe for hackers.
But
like,
all of these new numbers are going
to
be that.
We need to robo-dial the thermostats. Guess what, guys? They've got their own prefix. This is going to be easy.
Also, do you think all of your appliances work on the same mobile plan? Does that have data caps?
Oh. I'm not going to be toasting my bagel this morning because I've hit my data cap.
Comcast says I can't refrigerate my food. Yeah, that's crazy. There's going to be some hilarious things and tragic things that come from that.
It's going to get worse than Cory Doctorow's unauthorized bread. This is going to be amazing.
When we think about streaming and big events in the world, you know, you think about like the Super Bowl, you think about, I don't know, what's the hot, remember when American Idol, like everybody watched the finale of American Idol, what's the hot show now?
Game of Thrones? The Voice? Game of Thrones. I can't wait for the salt. Oh, I can't wait.
Game of Thrones I don't think as many people stream that. But anyway, I wouldn't think of, as, you know, an entitled American, I wouldn't think that it would be cricket in India, but it is by a huge margin.
There's a lot of people in India.
Yeah, Hotstar, Disney's Indian streaming service, sets new global record for live viewership. Things are taking off in India with media. So this is 18 million simultaneous playbacks on this stream. The infrastructure to be able to handle that is seriously impressive.
Yeah, and they said they had no problem scaling up to that.
Wow.
And they said, in the future, we'll do more and it'll be no problem. And the previous record was 10 and it was theirs.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'd love to talk to the engineers that put that together, because you got to think, and it's a whole different game at that kind of scale.
So this was the, I guess, the championship of this cricket league. And literally everybody watched it. How many people does India have?
1 billion.
So
aren't they more populous than China at this point? Or are they like right behind them? They're second, I think.
Second, yeah.
Well, China's got what, like 2 or 3 billion?
I think like right at 2.
Yeah, not so. Quite. But 18 million people watching the same thing, no matter how big your population is, that's just incredible. So
it is a seriously impressive technical accomplishment. It makes me sad that Disney's at the helm of that.
Disney, yeah.
Well, that's not even surprising, though.
But I see why Disney bought this company now.
Well, it goes to show you that Disney, because Disney has said, and we'll have another story about this, they're like, no, we are dead serious about streaming. We're going to do it, and we're going to do it Disney style, which means we're going to just dominate it. And
yeah,
here they are.
Monopolize
it's
it.
Literally like in X-Files, where it's like the smoking man's in the chair, and all you see is his silhouette with like the lit cigarette, except it's the mouse ears with the lit cigarette. That's how serious Disney is.
Yeah. Well, let's get into social media. And, of course, that means all Facebook.
Because RIP.
Facebook is all that the news wants to talk about when it comes to social media. Maybe once in a while we'll talk about Twitter, but mostly just Facebook and the Facebook subsidiaries, of course. And the first thing let's talk about relates to China. Because, you know, we make these arguments about China. We talk about, you know, Huawei and the Chinese companies. Huawei, if you look at our big data companies, and our government has this contentious relationship with them, but also the size of Huawei and China. Whereas that government is like they're just in bed. So she says it's not fair.
Facebook's Sheryl Sandberg. Chinese tech companies are also powerful and they will not be broken up. And did you watch the interview with this?
I did not.
Good Lord. I know she's a lizard person and I know that I should not be convinced by the words that she says, but she was seriously impressive in this interview. I don't know if it's coaching or just raw skill or if she has like carnivorous audio earwigs that go in your brain and change the way that you think, but she had a really good argument here that I think falls apart under scrutiny, but it sounds really good.
Is she like Saruman, where he has like that really sweet voice and everyone kind of agrees with him, and then they think about it later and they're like, wait, what?
Yeah,
did I agree
yeah,
to?
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I think that's why they hired her. They knew. They knew that Zuckerberg could never be.
I've never seen her on this on her A game. It is ace. Like, you should go watch the interview because it is.
No, you shouldn't if that's the case. You should avoid it. Like the aforementioned Saruman. You should not be alone in a room with him. But anyway, it's a terrible argument because it's like, hey, the U.S. should be more like China.
No, I took it away as the U.S., there's a coming battle, basically. And the U.S. needs allies like Facebook to fight for the U.S. interests. And
oh my gosh, she is Saruman.
Yeah, and it was like, wow, that actually makes some sense.
But
it
doesn't. We must join with him, Gandalf.
It doesn't because
yeah, exactly.
Huawei is infrastructure.
Yes.
And I can see the power in that. But Facebook is just nonsense.
Well, I mean, you can apparently steal an election with Facebook. And so that's kind of the undertone here, though.
But you have to buy into the fact that the people didn't actually want severe change.
Yes, okay, that's true. But the argument that's presented here has a more sinister undercurrent in that it would seem to suggest that they believe internally that Facebook is insanely powerful at manipulating public opinion and, you know, where the society can go. And so if they push it hard enough, they could move the entire society one way or the other.
That's probably true.
And that she's willing to wield that power so surreptitiously is damn scary.
And we also, there's a really good chance, based on what we've seen, if not for the terrible 2018 that Facebook had in terms of PR, Zuckerberg was looking at that presidency.
Zuckerberg could just, I mean, if they believe what the undertones here are, you know, the presidency doesn't even matter. They could just control the world and it's fine.
Well, there's a lot of people believe that's the case. Although he's probably too young, right? How old is he?
I think he's in his 30s. So he's probably too young.
He's probably looking at that as an advantage, though. It's like, you know, all the Bilderbergs are going to die and that'll leave their empire to me.
Well, that's not how that works. They have lots of heirs.
But they're incompetent. It's fine. They're not as bloodthirsty and ruthless as I am.
So, we mentioned Cambridge Analytica, and that was the tipping point. That's where Facebook went from, you know, this thing that everybody thought was fun and, hey, yeah, it's a big company, but yeah, I love logging on and seeing what my neighbors are up to and, you know, my family and, you know, posting my pictures to, oh God, they're doing that? Are you really? Really? They're evil. And it seems to have affected recruiting.
Facebook has struggled to hire talent since the Cambridge Analytica scandal, according to recruiters who work there. So this is a CNBC article, and I was trying to figure out what the motivation is for this particular article, because when Facebook would make offers to candidates, according to the information they dug up, it was like an 85% acceptance rate. So, I mean, you know, pretty good benefits, big company, all that kind of thing. Now the acceptance rate is more like 35%, maybe a little better, but 35% at the lowest end, which is quite a swing.
It could just be that they're screening more heavily for sociopathy. You know, they don't want the Google problem where the people internally rise up against Dragonfly.
Once they realize what they're working on? Yeah, well, they should have known what they're working on. Well, once they realize, they took action.
Yeah, they're using the Facebook leverage and the knowledge about your habits, and they're finding only people that they know will work within the Facebook evil. So that's and only 35%. So
a small portion of the population is evil enough to work at Facebook.
Engagement challenge. Are you a recent college grad and did you apply to work or did Facebook come recruiting? Tell us your story in the comments below.
We should make a quiz on level1text.com. Are you evil enough to work at Facebook?
Oh, yeah.
Do you even realize how evil you are?
We should add some listicles to the website, too.
Remember when we talked about the people who were moderating Facebook video were basically being traumatized by
all the horrible things they were seeing.
Yeah, and not just the horrible things they were seeing, but just the frequency of horror, right? Like it's probably, you could get used to one kind of terrible thing, but it's just a potpourri of evil. So how do you fix that? How do you make someone who has to deal with that kind of terribleness, how do you make their life better? And Facebook has the answer. It's $3.
Facebook will increase pay for its contractors in North America. Yeah, $3 from The Verge. That's going to just... That guy in the last article that said that it's like, I just go home and immediately take a shower after work for like an hour, and I just sob in the shower.
Stare at the wall.
That guy is totally not going to have to do that now.
He's going to sleep better with that $3.
You watch 5 beheadings and a rape, you know, just in a row. But then you look at your Starbucks cup and it was like, well, this was basically free this hour. I feel totally better right now.
I've forgotten about all the terrible things I just witnessed.
I could almost get a 6-inch sub based on my suffering for the past hour. Yeah, bad news. Now, Facebook has talked about with Cambridge Analytica and now the rank wave thing, which we haven't even seen where that's gone yet. They have to try to get ahead of things that disrupt democracy, and they claim that they have done that in West Africa.
Facebook shuts down an Israeli firm's effort to influence politics in West Africa. So LinkedIn linked to a shadowy company called Archimedes Group. So this article talks about stuff that Facebook has done here, and I was convinced, but it seems a little too... like a PR stunt by Facebook.
Well, and the I can't remember the slogan for Archimedes Group, but it was literally like the most obvious thing. Like, we'll win you an election.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't subtle at all.
Paying for political victories. Yes,
exactly. Yeah. That's exactly the kind of thing it was. It was like, oh, that seems a little on the nose, but okay.
It seems like somebody inside Facebook literally just Googled the company and was like, wait, this company's kind of shady. And then they turned it into a PR event.
And The Verge gave him a headline. So, and we're talking about it. So, hey, we're all complicit.
They're on the highest part of the totem pole if we're talking about it.
Now, when it comes to Facebook, like I said, the 2020 election, big tech companies are going to be one of the biggest issues. And Facebook is definitely at the forefront of that. I think Facebook probably ahead of Google, don't you?
Yeah. Because Facebook's definitely had more missteps.
And I think Facebook... A lot of politicians are more willing to have Facebook as an enemy than Google.
Yeah.
Because if Google messes with your search results, you're done. So they're going to go after them. But it seems like that's a good thing for the politicians because America cares about it.
40% of Americans support antitrust action against Facebook after a co-founder has called for it to be broken up. That co-founder, we talked about this last week, but Business Insider was like, hey, that sounds like a good idea for a poll. And so their results are in this week, and 40% of Americans support antitrust action against Facebook.
And I wonder if any big political players saw that headline. And 2 days later, you get this article. 4 days later.
You mean a staffer saw it.
Oh, hey, Bernie. How's it going? So The Verge has this article. Bernie Sanders becomes the latest 2020 candidate to call for a Facebook breakup. It was kind of light on details. I really felt like Bernie was phoning it in on this
one.
Well,
listen. Elizabeth Warren did it first. So, late to the game, Bernie. But yeah, he basically just came out and said, break up the big tech companies. And among his people, I don't think that's a radical thing to say.
No. Well, I'm a little bit worried about it because they haven't demonstrated any kind of technical competence. And it's like, okay, you want to break up Facebook? I might go along with that. But why?
Don't worry. The Democratic Party will screw Bernie Sanders 100%. You don't have to worry about him being the Democratic candidate. That's not going to happen.
Speaking of things that are not going to happen, that was the last story. So you'll have to wait until tomorrow for more stories.
All right.
Woo!